a great pleasure to have you all here in Washington to have this opportunity to talk to you as one chief executive to others and about our plans to prepare America for the century ahead. With me, as you saw, I'm usually a group any place I go anymore. So the Secretary Bennett, Secretary Bowen, Chuck Hobbs, Vice President, and they'll all help me in answering any questions that you may have. Mostly, however, we want to listen to you to help to hear what's happening at the state level, because I may be prejudiced having been a governor myself, but I'm convinced that it's in our states and communities that we find many of the most innovating and exciting answers to our problems. First, however, I want to talk about what we see as our three top agenda items: welfare reform, education, and competitiveness. All three, of course, are connected. Success in all three areas is necessary if America is going to be all it can be. On the subject of welfare reform, tomorrow we'll be sending our legislative proposal to Congress to start that long and convoluted process which we hope to get true reform started. Our goal is to establish a process that allows states and communities to implement their own anti-poverty ideas based on their own unique experiences. States and communities are in the best position to find solutions to welfare dependency. In fact, a number of you already have used the limited independence that you now have to improve your welfare systems. Dozens more of you have demonstrated that you're eager to pursue new ideas and fresh strategies. I'm also convinced that for any plan to work, it must be based on the advice of experts, not the ones in the universities and the think tanks whose expert advice helped create the current welfare crisis, but the real experts, people like a lady named Kimmy Gray, a one-time welfare mother with five children. We had her here in the White House the other day, and she told us about how she had gotten herself off of welfare and sent her five children to college. Not only that, but she went on to become the driving force behind the Kenilworth Parkside Resident Management Association, taking over the management of these housing projects. And when she started out, she says that Kenilworth Parkside was referred to as the end of nowhere, the part of the city that's been forgotten. But through the resident management concept, welfare recidivism was reduced from 85% to 22%, and teenage pregnancy was cut by 50%. Crime in the neighborhood fell, and new businesses started up. And how did she do it? Well, her work echoes what every other true expert about welfare knows. What everyone who's had success getting people off of welfare rather than on will tell you. Our philosophy, she said, is that the only way we could save our community was by saving our families. And how did they do that? Well, here are her words. By returning respect and responsibility and pride back to the fathers of our community. There, spoken with the eloquence that comes from experience, is the fundamental truth about the difference between dependency and self-sufficiency. It hinges on the family. The fundamental principle that must guide all our efforts at reform is that anything we do, any change we make, must strengthen, support, and give encouragement to the family. We must do all we can to assure that the family is a safe haven for its children, a source of strength and security for all its members. Let me make a related point. In some cases, daycare may be a necessity, but it can never replace the love and care of the parents themselves. We've always been a nation that's drawn its strength from the values of family life. If America hopes to enter the 21st century united and free, we must once again make a wholesale conscious commitment to strengthening and protecting those basic family values and the strong, stable families from which they spring. I know you all recently received my letter on welfare reform, and I know that you're as dissatisfied with the present system as we are. And many of you have thought long and hard about what needs to be done. Well, that's why we're anxious to hear what ideas your task force, headed by Governor Mike Castle, has to offer. And all of you individually have made great strides. We need your ideas. asking each of you to help get our legislation through Congress. And I'm asking each of you then to use your new freedom to try new approaches in your state so that we can work together to make welfare work better. Also, I've previewed the ideas you're going to consider tomorrow as a group. Ideas developed over the past year by your task force on welfare reform. And I want you to know that I applaud those efforts, especially the emphasis that you're putting on increased self-responsibility among people the welfare system is too often assigned to long-term dependency. An important part of the solution for many is education. And may I take a minute here to congratulate all of you on the impressive strides you are making in this area. Last August, you issued a report called Time for Results, and you raised some tough questions and offered some bold recommendations for reform. You told us that our education system should set high standards and hold teachers and administrators accountable for the jobs they do. You told us that we should encourage more parental choice and involvement. And you told us to open up the education profession to qualified individuals from other professions. And you said that our colleges should be judged by their success or failure in educating our students. Secretary Bennett tells me that you're moving full speed ahead to put your recommendations into practice. I want to urge you today to continue to build on your report and to carry your ideas through. Specifically, ensure that all our students have good teachers by opening up the profession to all competent individuals who have mastered the subjects to be taught. And make an even greater push for higher standards and higher expectations for all of our children, regardless of their social or economic background. You've taken the lead. Federal government is going to work to do our part. Last week, I sent two important pieces of legislation to the Congress. Our ECIA proposal to improve the education of disadvantaged children and our bilingual proposal to restore flexibility to decisions on the best means of teaching children whose first language is not English. These proposals complement your reform efforts. We're encouraged by the progress of our education reform movement. You're on the front lines, so let's stick with it. And finally, the task of competitiveness, welfare reform, and education are a big part of that. People are our most valuable resource, and their imagination and creativity, hard work, and faith, that's what will drive America into the 21st century. We can't afford to leave anyone out, and no one must be excluded. And that's why I recently sent to Congress proposed legislation to ensure that government will contribute its share to America's quest for excellence. Ours is a diverse package, as diverse as the challenge before us. But diverse though it is, every part of it has one central purpose, and that is to make certain that in the years ahead, the door of opportunity and excellence is open to all Americans. Well, now I've broken my promise of last night at dinner. I've talked too long. Our friends from the press will be leaving now, and when they've cleared the room, I'll just turn to your chairman, Bill Clinton, so that I can hear some of your ideas. Nice to have you. jeans and the sweatshirts over there were all in tuxedos last night. Covering that event. Well, Governor Clinton.
Thank you.
session, we feel that legislation that has to do with something going on now, state level, administrative states and so forth, when legislation is proposed, it should cite the constitutional permission or provision that makes it all right for the federal government to propose such legislation, and if they can't find the constitutional right, then they can't have that legislation imposed on you.
Mr. President, we are very pleased with all the work that the White House has done to welfare. I've worked with Mr. Hobbs on that, which is something that's been very helpful. And I know they look at the press and they read about welfare reform. We talk about it among the government, and the whole sign of feeling that maybe our expectations are getting too high. And everybody feels that next year there won't be any more welfare in the country, which we know is not true.
No.
Is that what you're doing in legislation, what the governor's doing, and what some of the congressional committees are doing? There is that attitude about it. It seems to me that the real change will come about, just as you have outlined on many occasions, will come about because of small programs that work in the various states. They will come about incrementally. It will come about because Congress and the White House and various governors can work together. And I think it's vitally important that we be able to work with the various departments under your administration, perhaps even Secretary Bennett or Secretary Bell might comment on this, but sometimes we are concerned about the flexibility which exists, there are waivers which are needed for Medicaid, for example, the ability of education to work with the welfare problems, and all these interrelated things, because we sometimes face a lot and say this is the way to cure a problem, but we all know that they're very interrelated. There are many problems that face the people and the whole segment of society who are trying to lift up, and just interested in whatever comments anybody might have concerning that flexibility and the willingness to work together and knock down the barriers and get things done.
Believe me, I had experience from your standpoint on that very thing and trying to get back in 1973 and 74 to get the welfare reform in California that we had studied and Chuck Hobbs was a part of bringing about. And we had months and months of fighting with the bureaucracy here in Washington. And I think this is something that all of us have to watch. We all have the same problem. That down there among the permanent employees of government, the bureaucracy, sometimes they manage things and we're not aware of it. And this can happen at the state level, can also happen at the federal level. And I'm well aware of it and going to do our best at our end. And any time if you find that you're being snowed on some things here at the federal level, please let me know. Because I remember coming to a point as governor when I told our people to stop negotiating with the Washington bureaucracy and that we would have no meeting unless the president was present. And by golly, he came out to California and we had a meeting with the same people who'd been holding us up and with him present. And in about 15 minutes of our telling our case, he just turned to his people and said, I want that done. And we got our welfare reform. So we all have to watch for that. Sometimes we don't know what's going on. I gave an example at our table last night of that, of a man some years ago that went to prison for 35 murders he had committed. He was just a chain killer. And believe it or not, we found out after he'd been in prison for a while, he was still getting a regular check from Social Security Disability because a psychologist, not knowing he was a murderer, had declared that he was psychologically unable to hold a job. And there we were paying his room and board and wardrobe in prison, and he was still getting this check. We stopped that. So we can, but it's gonna take. And I encourage you to personal communication anytime when we think that there's a roadblock.
Thank you.
they gave you the unemployment figure and so forth, but we know that it isn't uniform across the country. There are certain areas that, for very specific reasons, are in depression, where their next door neighbor could be doing very well, as a state. So we're conscious of that and know that we have to face this. Could I just, a little personal experience with that welfare reform of ours back in California. It was a workfare program. It was to make able-bodied welfare recipients report for work at a useful community or public task. And one of the things we did to prevent there being boondoggles and so forth, because the person's got to believe that he's doing something he or she is worthwhile, or they're not going to have any respect for what they're doing. We, in advance, had every community in the 35 counties that were going to conduct this experiment, every community, every kind of commission performing a function, every county, we asked a simple question. Tell us what you would be doing, what additional things you would be doing if you had the manpower and the money. Which would makes it specific to talking about useful things that would be proper to be done. And we had very few. Then they sent them all to us, and we screened them and approved them and sent them back. So these were the jobs that the welfare recipients were going to be assigned to. But we also then took people from the Labor Department and made them job agents. We gave each one of them a list of names of these people, and they were to keep an eye on them and see what they were doing and what their abilities were and so forth. At the same time, then, they would try to move them from that public job, opening it up for someone else on welfare, move them into a private enterprise job. And in the 1973-74 recession, which had high unemployment in California, we funneled 76,000 people through those jobs into private enterprise jobs and off of welfare permanently. So I just throw this out in case someone has wondered about just workfare, but the jobs they were doing were useful tasks. And a lot of job training is just teaching somebody they have to get up in the morning and go to work. I could see where some of the things you were mentioning are something that would not be brought to the top-level attention, cabinet-level attention here in Washington, and we wouldn't know about those problems. We'd like that input.
Yes, Mr. President, to follow up on what Governor DeBacus said about the dislocated worker program, here's one where we're having a difficult time getting the administration to understand our problem. In the farm states, we've had a tremendous number of farm families dislocated, over 10,000 in Kansas in the last 3 years alone. Under the trade legislation that's on the Hill,
obviously. The whole world right now, is, we know, is producing an agricultural surplus. And there are going to be people that are no longer going to be needed as farmers. And they certainly should have our help in opening up other channels to them for a career.
We don't want them on welfare. They don't want to be on welfare. They want new training. We've got good schools, vocational schools, especially to provide that training. If we just had the guidelines changed to recognize them as eligible, we could handle it at the state level.
Let's get into that. Tell you right there is that we have the Department of Agriculture working right now on research to find out the answers to problems of that kind. And I don't know that. You just said there to the Secretary of Agriculture and to see where we are on that, whether that's being considered, and if not, to look at it. And maybe this isn't an answer to a question of yours, but I'm going to seize the opportunity to say something about the furor that was raised as if for the 88 budget that we are cutting back on the drug program, including education and so forth. We're not. What we had was an 87 budget that had almost $1 billion added to it over the previous year. Every budget for education, Ross, for this drug program has been going up every year. In 87, there was that big surge. Now, 88, it comes down to less than that, but only because that added money in 87 was for, like, one-time facilities, the buying of aircraft and so forth, weaponry, and initiating some programs. And a part of that same money is going to be spent in 88 on those things. And it doesn't show in the budget because it was budgeted in 87. But so we have not cut. We have actually increased the regular budget for the drug campaign, including education.
Yeah,
in some things where, again, we need your help with Congress. What we have proposed and what we have before the Congress now is recommendation to deregulate natural gas, to repeal the windfall profits tax, to change the Fuel Use Tax Act, to find some incentives to encourage secondary recovery. And we're awaiting a report from the Energy Department on the national security impact of the low oil prices. And all of these things we think could contribute. Now, it doesn't mean we shut out anything else, but all of these could contribute to helping the energy industry, just as when we deregulated oil. I think just I hadn't left the Capitol from being sworn in as president when I okayed that, and the uproar that was raised that what that was going to do, and prices were going to go through the ceiling and everything, and it didn't happen. Things got better because of it. But all of these things we think could be helpful. For that. I know that there's suggestion that it be increased, but we also think that if we go forward in these things, there's going to be elimination of expensive things because they're not useful, but that money then will remain to be used in the other ways that your experimenting is leading to. But we recognize that we're not going to pull the rug out from under everyone. We have an obligation for those people who, through no fault of their own, have to have help. They're going to continue to have help.
And Bill wants to add a quick word.
Bill Bennett?
Thank you.
education belonging at the state and local level really as to policy, there's something to look at. I don't have the figures right here at hand, but it seems to me that there has been a drastic increase in employees in education that is greater than the increase in the number of students. But when you boil down that increase, it isn't increased numbers of teachers. It's increased number of administrators. And I wonder if someplace in our educational field we have a little change in balance there that isn't necessary. Like one last caution for you here, that then as long as I've got to get out of here, it's to ask you a favor. I know that as governors, you don't, strictly speaking, have a foreign policy role. But I also happen to believe that you're some of this country's most effective representatives abroad. And when it comes to trade, when it comes to expanding foreign markets for our products, you simply can't be beat. So you're America's best salesman, so I'm asking you in the year ahead to somehow find time in your busy schedules to lead at least one true trade mission overseas. Go out there and sell America. And leave that as one last request here with you, and then all of us realize what interfering with our wives' luncheon could mean. I guess we better call it off.